Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Jaguars turn the page and look ahead to Week 14 of the National Football League as they host the Indianapolis Colts coming up this week. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you on a Tuesday. Brought to you by our friends at Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Logs, I understand your point. There's no relief coming, right? There's not a crop of defensive ends out there waiting for the call, right? I mean, that's just the way it is in the National Football League. But how much can you fix in one offseason? I mean, is this a case of, it was the defense playing above its head a little bit and it's starting to catch up, the lack of depth? And, I mean, how fixable are the issues that they have in one offseason? I understand you get Fowler back, hopefully, right, healthy. Mm-hmm. I understand you should get Cedric Marks back.
Hopefully,
right? And I understand you have the chance to go out there and sign guys in free agency, depending on what's available, and the draft. You can focus on that side of the ball. But the feeling I think Tony and I have is looking at this team, yeah, you could maybe add a few pieces on offense, but they're going to be more depth pieces than anything. You seem like you've got your key guys in place that are going to grow together. It's pretty exciting on that
on
side.
Offense,
football,
yeah,
on offense,
yeah. I think you're good.
Right, so how soon then until how can they have the defense at least catch up to a large enough degree to make them a contender next year? When I say a contender, I'm not saying they're going to go 14-2. You know what I'm saying. I mean, can they be a legit contender for a division title in a more normal year, you know, if it's going to require 9 or 10 wins? Can they get the defense that good in one off season's time?
I think they can. And the reason I say that is, one is that you have a secondary, I think that's okay. But I think you have to create more competition in the secondary next year immediately, whether it be a high pick in the draft.
When you say secondary, which specifically where you would spend
matter.
Your pick?
It doesn't really matter.
Best playmaker at any position?
It doesn't, yeah. Safety, corner, doesn't matter. Give me a guy that can play in the secondary. Because, you know, to be honest with you, I think if you had to pick and look at all four guys, do you have one in mind that you feel like he's unbeatable?
Not unbeatable, but yeah. I think you feel pretty good about Aaron Colvin. Right?
That's the one.
That's your guy, right?
And here's the thing. Next year you have James Sample coming back. Okay, there's immediate competition for John Cyprian. Okay, to maybe have competition to get more consistent. Because, you know, the frustrating thing with Jonathan, he can look so good and then have a 2-week stretch where he is lights out. And then the next week, where did he go?
Right.
And I think that's the battle and that's the challenge for Jonathan Cyprian, is to find a level of consistency week in and week out.
How does someone do that? How do you do that?
You know, I think it's a couple things. One, it's the player himself that's got to be able to find it. Number two, the coach has to be able to demand it. And number three, competition is the greatest thing in the world. And if you have competition, that the threat of losing your job because somebody else is going to get your playing time is the greatest motivator in the world.
Fear.
It's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same thing with the offense. You know, Wisniewski and
Luke Boyanco.
Luke Boyanco at center all training camp. And don't you know that in the back of Wisniewski's mind, after having an errant snap, he's thinking, and if I don't get this right, they're going to put in Luke Boyanco, right? Same thing goes for left guard Zane Beadles. I think Zane Beadles has played better this year. Has he played at a level that you'd say, okay, he's fine, we don't have to worry about? No. But he's played better because knowing that you have Tyler Shatley behind, and then earlier on in the year you had A.J. Cann behind.
Right. You're going to have a lot of competition.
Absolutely.
For the interior offensive line spots next year on the roster.
That's what made, and I think is a big reason why Seattle's defense has been so good, because they had so many guys that could compete week in and week out for play time. And I think that you're not at that level on defense right now. I think you're close on offense to where you need to be. I mean, look at the wide receiver position. I mean, you got guys across the board that you feel good about. The running back position needs to get there. The offensive line position, I think you're right there. I think right where you need to be. I think when you get Josh Wells back next year, more competition at left tackle. Sam Young provided great competition, I thought, as a backup swing guy with Austin Pasdor, and I think that he gave some competition to Jeremy Parnell. All Jeremy Parnell is a self-motivated guy. He doesn't need to look in the rearview mirror to find out motivation.
Well, let me sidetrack here for a second. How's Parnell played overall this year, in your opinion?
Very good.
We don't talk much about him.
And that's a good thing, right?
Right.
That's a good thing. He's been very good. And I thought that the game this past week was his best game, run blocking wise. I think that he had some stretches throughout the season that was just kind of okay. He was a little high because, you know, in the preseason we were seeing him and Brandon Linder, I mean, just move people.
Right.
I mean, I'm talking move them, which just doesn't happen in the NFL. And he was moving people this week. Very impressive. And he's been consistent. You know, anytime you're not talking about an offensive lineman, job well done. Job well done. So I think there's plenty of competition on the offensive side of the ball. But where's the competition on the defensive side of the ball? You know, and especially up front and at the linebacker position. You have no competition. You have none. I mean, if you're going to play next week, you know, you're not happy with the Leo position, what would you do? For me, I'd be playing Ryan Davis more. I've been,
right.
been saying that for a long time. Whether or not they agree with it, I know they don't because they're
apparently
not playing
him. They don't feel, I guess, he can hold up on the early rundowns, right? Is that, I mean, why else wouldn't he be playing more?
Let him prove that he can't.
Okay, but don't you think that seems
kind of
to be their belief anyway?
Yeah, I mean, otherwise he'd be playing.
Right.
You know, but I mean, my belief is that, you know, let him prove it.
Right.
Let him prove that he can't. And Ryan Davis plays a lot of special teams. Well, if Ryan Davis plays special teams, why can't Andre Branch fill that role and play special teams, and then Ryan Davis can get more snaps at Leo? If Andre Branch can't do that, then you find somebody else that can.
Right.
It's pretty simple.
Right. All right, hold those thoughts. We got to take a break. We got 2 hours to fill with plenty of Jaguar questions for you, and I'm sure folks out there listening want to get in and ask you some things as well. 641-1010, the phone number as always. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line number if you'd like to text in your questions. Today, our social media question of the day, we asked you through three quarters of the season now, 12 out of 16 games for the Jacksonville Jaguars, which Jaguar has most exceeded your expectations this year? And I'm happy to say that just based on the early returns, there are a lot of different candidates in this regard for people out there. There may be one guy that leaps right to mind for you, Logs. It looks like there is, but hold that thought because there are a lot of people saying a lot of different things from a lot of different perspectives. Maybe they had more expectations for certain guys than others, but share your thoughts with us today on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, LOGS56, and at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and also on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Which player, which Jaguar has most exceeded your expectations this year? It's a Tom Bush Family of Dealerships question of the day. We'll take your calls. We'll discuss the state of the Jags. We'll hear from Gus Bradley after he had a day to reflect on the Jaguars' loss to the Tennessee Titans, see if he had any answers forthcoming. All that coming up and more. Jaguars Today on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. We're live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Spending time with Professor Logs. Jeff Lagerman in the house, as he is every Tuesday here live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Before we get to the phone calls, and we've got them coming in already at 641-1010, we'll get it right out to you. We'll also hear from Gus Bradley coming up a little bit later on the show. Jeff, I've heard a lot of questioning about the defense, and with good reason, particularly with the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, you look at the numbers, but you know there's reason for questioning.
Right, no doubt about it. And you know you talked about personnel, and there's you know the lack of competition because you've got what you've got. There aren't a bunch of great players available to you at this stage of a season, in midseason, that you can enhance your roster with. So a lot of the criticism over the last couple of weeks has gone towards Bob Babich and the coaching staff. You know, and I'm sure there's blame to go around everywhere. But I guess my question would be, is Bob handcuffed by the personnel that he has? Is he handcuffed in some way by, this is Gus Bradley's defense, and Gus says, this is how I want you to run it regardless, and this is what we're going to do? Or does he have, how much latitude does he have in there to make his own calls, to put his own imprint on the defense, and has what he's done or not done contributed to where they find themselves?
Well, I think it's a compilation because, you know, Dwayne Walker, I think, has influence, you know, the secondary coach. I think assistant head coach Todd Walsh has influence, and Gus Bradley obviously has influence because, you know, he's a defensive-minded coach. But on game day, it's Bob's call. You know, I mean, that's, you have to be able to allow your coordinators to be their own men. And so the calls are Bob's. Can they be better? Sure, they can be better. You know, I can't sit there and look at every single play call because I don't know the play calls.
Sure.
I can just, you know, look at the film and try to deduce exactly what it is, and that's hard to do sometimes. But, you know, I mean, one example that comes to mind is Antonio Gates and Ryan Davis covering them down the field against San Diego. That's not a great call.
We saw Pozlesny on Kendall Wright at some point. Is that just a case?
That's more of a zone.
Is that the
yeah.
Okay, that's a case of sometimes that's going to happen.
But, you know, that's the one thing I think that, you know, that has been disappointing in the Tennessee game is that the spacing and the zone coverage was not good. Yeah, and what I mean by that is that when you play a zone, but you're not covering grass just to cover grass. You know, you're playing men that are running through a zone, and you're trying to relate to where they are, and you have to have a certain level of awareness. And I thought that against Tennessee that the awareness was not great, and that's on the players, that's on the coaches, that's on the – I don't want to say the scheme because I think the scheme is good. I mean, the scheme is proven to work when you get good players. Can you coach the players up better than what they're doing? Absolutely. You know, so I think it's a combination of things. I think it's a combination of players. I think it's a combination that the calls can be better because I think any coach will tell you, any coach that's humble will tell you that I can always coach better. And if they say anything else, then they're not being realistic.
Yeah, one play in particular stood out to me, and I've mentioned this on the post game and yesterday as well, that the Jags were sending a lot of pressures at different times, and Mariota was getting the root of the ball pretty quickly. But on one instance, they sent three, and they dropped eight into coverage.
Yeah, and it was like a third
and
11.
Yeah. And they hit Delanie Walker, and he never came off them. He stared him down the whole way. And it's like, if there's one guy that my 11-year-old knows you got to cover in that situation, it's Delanie Walker.
That's what I'm talking about zone spacing.
Right.
You got to have an awareness.
There's got right who the hot guy is in the middle of the field, who is his go-to guy in these situations, and that to me was as frustrating as anything. When you have eight in coverage and you only got five guys potentially out in the pattern,
coverage should be tighter.
It should be in his back pocket.
Just like it was for the Jaguars against San Diego when they got down in the red zone. San Diego dropped eight.
Right,
and you're looking at the game,
and then there are defensive players everywhere.
Film,
right,
and you're like, well, who's Blake going to throw to?
Right.
You know, he had no options. You know, so you want to see the same type of thing when the Jaguars do the same type of thing, but it just didn't happen. And that's what I'm talking about, awareness and zone spacing, is that, you know, you had a couple guys and throughout the game that they're covering an area and there's nobody within 15 yards. Well, if there's nobody within 15 yards and you're on the outside and your closest guy to your zone is inside on the numbers or inside the numbers, squeeze it. Don't go out and cover blades of grass just because, well, I'm supposed to drop into this zone. You have to relate to where the routes are at within the zone. And that's, you know, it's not easy to do, but that's why they have a philosophy in that it's simple and then you coach it up. What I mean by that is that they don't run a complicated scheme here. They don't. And the reason they want to do that is they always talk about the players playing fast. Well, it's also playing fast and playing aware so that you can – it's like instead of trying to coach defense, the defense becomes second nature, and then you're adjusting to what you're seeing to be able to have balls that are contended. And that didn't happen. And when it's a guy like Delanie Walker, I think it – you know, like you're talking about, it makes you go, how in the world can that happen? You know, if somebody's in that zone that's
right,
close to where Delanie is, you got to have a little awareness and start squeezing towards Delanie, and that was frustrating.
Jeff, you mentioned a few moments ago that you didn't think that Telvin or Puz had a particularly good game on Sunday. I want to talk a little bit about Telvin specifically. Obviously, still in his second year, still learning a lot on the fly for him, but he's having a fantastic year statistically.
Yeah, very good year.
It feels like, you know, when you watch games at times that teams are trying to do stuff specifically to try to move Telvin Smith around because of his athleticism. Are my eyes deceiving me, or are they trying to fool him a little bit in coverage?
No, I think Telvin does a really good job overall. I mean, I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying that Telvin Smith is doing a bad job, because I think Telvin's doing a great job.
I do too, yeah.
And particularly, I think the most impressive thing that he's able to do is that he still plays the run game with strength. I think some of his reads could have been a little bit better as far as some of the play action stuff. And sometimes he gets a little bit caught in that, but, you know, speed sometimes can make up for that mistake and kind of cover it up. You know, and a lot of that is feel. You know, year two is being a guy. I think year three and year four is really when you have a guy really start to feel, I think, the flow. And the flow of the game is understanding, okay, what's pass and what's run. You know, when you watch the linebackers that end up being really good players, they never take a false step. If it's play action pass, they might take one step in that direction to where the run is, but then they just know. You know, whether it's the stance or it's the movement of the offensive lineman, they just get a feel for it. And it's better for Telvin. It's better than it was last year, so he's making progress. But he's such an elite athlete. I mean, I think he's having a great year. The run stuff, the run fits on the counters and stuff, him and Paul were just slow. They were just slow to flow. And I don't know if it was the threat of Mariota keeping it or the threat of Mariota running the ball or the threat of play action, but they were a little slow to react in the run. And then a few times they were a little slow to react to the play action. But it's not like that has been a trend, mm-hmm. you know, where it's been poor all year, you know, for them. I think for the most part all year long they've been pretty good. I think the last couple of weeks Paul hadn't been at his best in some of the coverage stuff. But, you know, that's kind of Paul. You know, I mean, that's what you get with Paul. Great run player, great tackler, and at times when he has to play in zone spacing, his awareness is not where it needs to be. You know, but that's what he is.
641-1010 is the number if you'd like to weigh in on any aspect of Jaguar football. It started off this morning out to Arlington with Yousef checking in here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Yousef.
What's going on? How y'all doing?
Good, man. What's up?
Hey, y'all got a lot of common sense. You're talking common sense. First of all, I want to address Chris Smith not getting playing time. Also, Ryan Davis, the fumble, Ryan Davis recovered. When you see Ryan Davis on the field, things are happening. The man that they have, if you look at his stats last year, he haven't had a lot of snaps, but he has 6.5 sacks. This year, he has, I think, what, 2, 3.5 sacks? I haven't even really seen him on the field. Why? Why not? Chris Smith early this year, he was going at it. Now, I mean, I realize he was hurt at one time, but after that, he's vamoosh. And then Gus Bradley says, hey, we're going to give next man up, or we're going to give him opportunities, branch on there. It, during the game, you can see there's no pass rush. Make changes during when it's happening. When it's happening, make changes. But and also, go back with last weekend, that play that you said, Jeff, it frustrated the hell out of me because I seen Clemens pull off and to go back out in the flats, and Mariota had so much time.
Well, your comments about Ryan Davis, I totally agree with you that I think that Ryan Davis needs to play, back his role off on special teams, find somebody else that can fill that role, and let him play some Leo. He's athletic. He has a sneaky strength to him. He makes things happen. I mean, the play that you're talking about to where he made the fumble recovery on the Telvin Smith sack calls fumble, I mean, he's literally crawling on the ground to get to the ball. He probably, like last year, he was, I think, number one on the team as far as opportunities and production. And for whatever reason, they kind of got him kind of in a niche. And I think sometimes you have to kind of work a player out of that niche. Now with Chris Smith, I like Chris Smith as a person. I think he plays hard, but I think he's limited. He doesn't have great athleticism. He's not fast. He might time fast, but I don't think he plays fast. I think he needs to be in a true 4-3 like he was at Arkansas and be a left end. I don't think he's an auto.
Let me ask you, because we get people who say, and I don't think it's a crazy notion, but people say, look, Clemens, Branch are not getting it done. Tony and I typically say, well, put Ryan Davis out of the equation for a second, mm-hmm. okay? Whatever position it is, okay? This guy's not getting it done. Well, our opinion is coaches are working with these guys every day. They see them all in practice. They have a feel for what they're good and what they're capable of doing. And if they felt like the next guy was a better alternative, sometimes, I think you said it, this is a, or maybe Gus said it. He said, that we all know what this league is. It's basically tolerate until you can replace, right? And if you don't have a better option on the roster, and people ask, well, why does this guy keep going? Anybody should be better than this guy. Fill in the blank for who this guy is. Mm-hmm. And our response is typically, but that's not always the case. Sometimes the next guy you have, the coaching staff thinks it would be a drop off even from what you're seeing. So when they see, is that what you're saying? When they see Chris Smith, they know what he's capable of, what they feel he's capable of. And therefore, even though they're not getting a lot of pressure, they don't think it would be any better with Chris Smith.
Yeah, I think that you have your, and I think what you're saying is dead on, and that you know, you the coaches have a very, I get great sense of what they.
They're not blind, right? I mean, they know absolutely. Who's not performing.
But there also comes to be a point to where you do it because it just needs to
just
be done.
Just do it.
That's right. And I think you're at that point. And what I mean by that is you may realize or you may think that. And I'm not in this category, but you may think that Ryan Davis can't play as well, or you may think that Chris Smith can't play as well, and you can't get the production that maybe Clem or Branch can get. But I also believe that you reach a point where you say, I don't care if I believe that I can't get the production, that by making that change, you make it just to make it.
You make it, and then maybe the guy surprises you.
Maybe, two things could happen. One is that the guy surprises you, okay, and he proves you wrong. Or number two, you know, he proves you right, but at the same time, the guy that got taken out
gets a fire lit.
Says, okay, if I'm gonna get back on the field, I need to be better than what I've been.
Right.
You know, so I think they're at that point.
All right, let's get another call in before we break here. Jim in Ponte Vedra, you're next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Morning, guys. Real quick, one comment. I think the Jags are in the same situation as Atlanta. Everybody's saying, you know, Dan Quinn was this defensive coordinator in Seattle, and both Dan Quinn and Gus are trying to run Seattle's defense, and they don't have the Seattle personnel. I mean, that's part of the problem. I think Atlanta's learning that as well. But my question to Jeff is this. When Julius Thomas came back, you made the comment that you were surprised that the defenses of the Jags' opponents tried to take Julius away and were fairly successful at it. They focused on him, which was surprising considering how well Hearns and Robinson were doing. Why is it that those teams have the ability to take our tight end out of the equation, but we don't seem to have that ability to take their tight end out of the equation? And I can't believe it's all personnel with some of these other teams we've played. So that's just my main question, guys.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think with Julius, when he came back and started to play, I wouldn't count the Tampa game so much because that was his first game back and nobody was really expecting him to play in that game. And I think the Buccaneers weren't really expecting him to play in that game. But I think in the next week and the week after that, teams gave him a little attention. And the Jaguars have the ability to do that and have done that before. I mean, they've doubled guys before. Is that a staple of their defense to where they're going to take two guys and cover one? That's not really the style that they play. That's not how Seattle plays. You know, some teams do that. Some teams don't. The Jaguars feel very confident that they have a Devon House and a Jonathan Cyprian that should be able to, I guess you could say, match the challenge of certain guys. Now, have they always done it? No, they haven't always done that. But with Julius, I think a lot of teams gave him some attention, but I don't think the teams ever gave him great attention. You know, a couple times you would see a safety and a linebacker on him, but is that something that was a game plan or is that something that was more that he's running a route that happens to be right into the teeth of the scheme? So I think it was a little bit of both. And why the Jaguars, are not game planning and taking certain players out. I think this past week is a good example that that's just not how they play. I think that you should have given more attention to Delanie Walker than what you were doing. You know, because Delanie Walker is a guy, you know, he's going to get the ball.
Right.
You know, but I mean, you really didn't do it.
It's one thing to stick to your principles of your defense. Another thing to say, you know what, maybe it's not working the way we have it ideally devised. Let's try something as an alternate here, even if it's for just a portion of the game, key third downs, whatever the case may be. And those are the adjustments, I think, that aren't being made that fans get frustrated with. And you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, to see Delanie Walker have the numbers that he had the first game, which was, what, over 100 yards receiving, I believe. And you knew going into that game, you know, with Justin Hunter and Kendall Wright ailing, I mean, all these guys.
It's going to be another same exact story.
You knew who was going to be the guy.
Sure.
You know, and I think this week you expected him again to be the guy. And I think with the matchup that you had with Dorrell Green-Beckham, I don't think you were overly concerned that he would be a great player, but you wanted Devon House, I thought, on him as much as you could just because of the length factor.
Right.
But they didn't flip-flop him, you know, and I think that could have been taken into consideration. But, yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, that's something that frustrates me as well. I would like to see more attention paid to certain guys. Now, like San Diego, Antonio Gates is a guy who you sit there and say, well, we need to double Antonio Gates. Well, Antonio Gates wasn't really showing prior to that game that he was Gates of old.
He hadn't scored since week five.
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, it didn't really warrant the attention. So you felt good about, okay, just maybe having Cyprian on him, and Cyprian obviously had a tough challenge, and Antonio Gates played much better. But against a guy like Delanie Walker that's week in and week out, absolutely you should have more attention on a guy like that.
641-1010, the number. We got to take a time out here. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line number. We'll check in on what you're sending and on that avenue as well. And the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships is this: which Jaguar player on either side of the football has most exceeded your expectations for 2015? Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Way and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Smith here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, we'll get a couple more in here with Jeff Loggeman, and coming up in the show, still we'll hear from Gus Bradley as he addressed the media yesterday with a day to digest what went down. Jags falling to the Tennessee Titans, falling to 4-8, hosting the Indianapolis Colts coming in. Chuck Pagano says it's likely Matt Hasselbeck will start this week. Hasselbeck was not as sure after the game. That'd be another Charlie Whitehurst sighting for the Jaguars if it came to that, but it looks like it'll be Hasselbeck coming in.
I hope it is Hasselbeck.
How come?
I mean, for one, you got more book on him recently in that scheme, so you know what they would like to call when he's in there. New offensive coordinator this time around for the Jaguars because Pep Hamilton was fired. I think you have a little more continuity, you know, if you know what to expect at the quarterback position. And to be perfectly honest with you, even though he has been 4-1 as their starter, I don't think he's great.
I don't either, and I think this week was a case in point.
Yeah, Pittsburgh made him. I watched the film of it yesterday. Pittsburgh, I think, did a great job against him, confused him at times, made him indecisive at times. And I thought Frank Gore was good. You know, the numbers overall weren't great, but
yeah.
I think in that game he was pretty good against Pittsburgh, given the opportunity.
Yeah.
So
that's a Pittsburgh defense coming off giving up 39 points too the week before to Seattle. So it's not like they're playing like world beaters.
No. No, which is crazy. I mean, 39 points to Seattle, you know.
Oh, Seattle's hot right now. They followed up against Minnesota.
What did they put up this week?
35, maybe?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Something like that. I mean, they're turning it up at the right time.
Without Marshawn.
And Thomas Rawls running better than Marshawn has at any point this mm-hmm. year. You know, Marshawn's, they kind of hit the wall in his career. I'd be surprised if we see much more Marshawn.
I think he's got plenty left in the tank.
Do you?
Yeah.
See, I don't know if he...
Not as a feature guy, you know, and as the main guy, but as a rotational guy.
Is he the kind of guy that's going to do that? He strikes me as a guy that he, you know, they... He talked about maybe retiring this year. They gave him
but he wanted more money. That's all.
He wanted more money, but that's the thing, though. If he's a situational guy, he's not getting more. He's going to go the other direction, right? I can't see Seattle bringing him back for $10-plus million next year, which I believe is what he's on the hook for. So.
Well, maybe they don't, but you know, a lot of times and you know, I don't know what his motivation is. Is he going to?
That's what I'm saying. He seems like a kind of a
different
dance to his own tune kind of guy.
He's a different guy, but you know what? I'd take him in a minute.
I'd be surprised if he plays. That's my guess.
Yeah.
But could be wrong.
Hey, well, you know, here, if you were general manager here, you're Dave Caldwell, would you take a look at him?
Sure.
As a situational player,
sure, if he's
rotational
willing
player.
To play for situational money,
yeah,
I would. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Right. That's what I question, though, whether at this stage of his career.
You know, situational money nowadays is three and a half million.
I understand that. Right.
You know?
But that's a far cry from what he's been doing the last few years.
Sure.
All. So.
But, you know, sometimes the realization of what I could make outside of football. And
oh,
what I
no
can
question.
Make as a situational back.
But there's also, you know, I agree with you.
Sure, like, I'll take it.
You know, Frank Franchi used to tell the story about, who am I thinking of? Quarterback Shane Matthews, former Gator, right? And, he lasted in the league a long time as a backup quarterback, started some games. And Shane was going to Miami. I think it might have been his 13th year in the league, right? He's going to Miami. And Frank said, I looked at the depth chart, man. You might get a chance to play. And his response is, I sure hope not.
Yeah.
I'm going there to add a year to the pension at this stage of the career, you know, because you're right. You're not going to make that in the private sector, buddy. All right, 641-1010. Let's get out to Fleming Island and welcome Tom to Jaguars today. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I have a comment and a question. My comment is I'd like to thank Jeff for Monday night. You do an outstanding job, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And my comment is when you look at the schedule for this coming Sunday, last Sunday, of course, the Texans lost and the Colts lost. You look at this coming Sunday, we play the Colts and the Patriots play the Texans. So what I'm curious about is how do we go about taking care of business at Everbank this Sunday? Because hopefully the Patriots will take care of business for us down in Texas.
Yeah, and the Patriots lost two in a row, right? And then two in a row for them?
Yep. Yes.
Denver
and
Philly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. That was a weird way to lose, though. They're up 14-0, gave up a punt return, a block punt, a defensive touchdown, and the next thing you know, and then everybody's dropping the ball, but they're not getting those receivers back this week.
No, that's hard to overcome that, you know, and if anybody could, it's Tom Brady, but I mean, after a while.
He put up magnificent numbers in that game.
You only have so many thumbs to plug the holes.
Did you literally the last drive, right in LaFell's hands, boink, right in Amendola's hands, boink, right in Keyshawn Martin's hands, boink, like three consecutive plays, and what are you going to do?
That's the way it is. You know, the one thing I think that this team needs to worry about is the Colts. I mean, don't worry about what.
That's all you can do.
You know, anybody else is doing, you know. Take care of your own business. I think that was one thing, we go back to 1996 because, I mean, it's relevant a little bit. And that in 96, we weren't ever thinking about, you know, what other teams in the division are doing, you know, kind of maybe in the back of our minds, you know, the only thing that we were aware of is that we were mathematically alive.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the only thing we knew.
And you wouldn't be if you lost.
No.
So keep winning.
And so we're like, you know what? Play loose, and we did, and we weren't ever concerned or overcome with thoughts about what the other teams are doing, and I think that's what made it to where we were able to perform at a high level in 96 and to make it to the playoffs, and then we just happened. I think the one game that we played that we were aware of the circumstance was the last game against Atlanta, and that was probably the poorest game we played, and we should have wiped the floor with the Falcons. I mean, it should have been a mop job, but we didn't play very well because
right.
I think we were all consumed by, but the entire time. So, I mean, for this football team that, you know, mathematically they're still alive and they do play Indianapolis and they do play Houston one more time. So they control the destiny somewhat, you know, but you can't think like that. And I don't think that they are because of the disappointment that they've had over the last number of weeks with kind of losing control of that own destiny.
Right.
Sure. And the situation is complicated enough. I mean, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, what they need now if they're going to win the division. And it's not just that the Jags need to win out. It's that these teams that are ahead of them, you know, they play Indianapolis and Houston, so they control that part of it. But whoever wins the Indianapolis-Houston game coming up here in a couple weeks can't win another game outside of that in their last four for the Jaguars to catch him. So, look, Houston plays New England this weekend, so they seem the most likely to lose those outside of those two games, but they both still play Tennessee. So you need Tennessee to beat one of those teams, whoever wins that game next week.
Right.
And you need Tennessee to beat that team.
And the one who loses that game,
right,
if they beat Tennessee, that's the only other game they can
right.
win.
So if Houston were to beat New England this week, you need the Colts to beat Houston coming off the win against New England, and then Tennessee to beat the Colts.
Like, yeah, and because of all that, that locker
just,
room down
just
there,
go beat Indy.
They're not even worrying
go
about
beat
all
them.
That.
Go beat the Colts.
And that's a good thing.
Let's get out to Arlington. Daryl is up next. Question of the day, by the way, is which Jaguars most exceeded your expectations in 2015? Hi, Daryl. How are you?
I'm okay.
What's up?
It I think House defense. He I would say Telvin Smith, but Telvin Smith been doing it since Florida State, so I would say him. But I think it's House and offense is I can't pick either or. I think it's both of the Allen boys. Been doing a great job, and I'm kind of impressed with Jaguars as a team, even though we lost a couple games. But they're not real predictable anymore. I used to sit in my living room couch and predict what plays they're gonna run, and I used to be right most of the time.
It's funny you say that because, you know, I'm listening to T-Wig and Hacker the other day on the fifth quarter and a couple weeks ago, and they're like, this team's so predictable. I could sit up there and call every single play. I think when you have, I didn't agree with that either, but I think what happens when you have a game where you don't play particularly well offensively or you don't light it up, like, it's hard to argue anything they did offensively in this game, right? I mean, the special teams, the kicking, the extra points is one thing, but when you're 6-for-6 in the red zone, I mean, did they miss a couple of plays? Sure. Every team misses a few plays. They gave you all the offense you needed to win in any week in the National Football League, or should have given you enough. But, yeah, I don't think they've been predictable, you know, pretty much the whole year.
I don't think so.
You know, but to me, again, we talked about this off the air. I'm evaluating Greg Olsen. I looked at last year. They scored 15.6 points per game. They're over more than 7 points higher this year on average. And I know the 39 adds to that, but they were over 6 points a game higher going into that game last week. So, I mean, you add a touchdown to your total, and Tony and I looked at it. If you add another 4 points next year, you're a borderline top five scoring offense in the National Football League.
Yeah.
Add it to what they're doing right now.
And generally speaking, predictable in the NFL means that fans are saying you're run, pass. And that's not what the Jags have been. They throw a lot on first down. They throw on running downs a lot with this team, and it's because that's where the strength of their offense is Bortles and the weapons they have in that passing game. I don't feel like they've been predictable.
No, I think they've been fantastic. I think the job that, you know, even though Greg Olsen has received some criticism throughout the year, that's part of the position, man.
Right.
It's the way it is. I mean, there will be weeks in a season that the offensive coordinator's going to get criticism, but anybody that thinks that he hasn't done a really good job with this offense as a whole, I think, is crazy.
I'm with you.
Done a great
as a whole. And it, like you said, there are always games and sequences you can always critique, and everybody's open for criticism, including us right here on Jaguars Today. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board, except Loggeman. That is, he's perfect all the time. We got this date in football. We got the Honda drive around the NFL. More of your calls coming up as well. We'll check in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, and we'll hear from head coach Gus Bradley of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today live at EverBank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date, 1940, it was the Chicago Bears establishing an NFL record in blowing out the Washington Redskins by a score of what? What's the highest scoring output in the history of the National Football League?
72-0.
73-0. You missed it, Jeff. You were so far off. Good guess. In the ballpark there. 10 Bears scored touchdowns, 10 different Bears. Chicago won the title in front of a crowd of 36,000 in Washington. Each player was paid $873 for his services.
Big money.
For that. And it was the first NFL championship game broadcast on national radio as well. Famous birthdays for this date. Heisman winner George Rogers won the Heisman in 1980. Was the first overall pick of the New Orleans Saints the very next year. Had some pretty big years there,
yeah,
by the way.
Had some issues.
He did have some issues. Turned 57 years old, but he's a guy who scored 18 touchdowns one season, had a 1,600-yard rushing season his rookie year, and I think four 1,000-yard seasons overall. Another guy who had some issues, Jeff George, born on this date in 1967, turns 48 years old today.
He was, I think, the most talented arm I'd ever seen in the league as a player.
Yeah.
That just, you know, had
threw the perfect
kinds.
Ball, right?
I mean, he was,
and could throw it 60,
any,
70 yards.
Any way, shape, or form. Very similar to Aaron Rodgers, and that Aaron Rodgers can throw it, you know, classic drop back on the run from weird angles. Jeff George could do that.
Jeff George led the league in passing yardage one year and had, I think, a high of like 29 touchdowns. He wasn't always terrible.
No.
He had some talent, but he was...
Reminds me a lot of Jay Cutler, you know, the perception of him, very similar.
Right, no leadership skills,
yep.
This very, very prickly personality, and couldn't... Because of that, that was really what led to his downfall. Because a talent like that, every team wants to give a guy like that a shot until he really wears out his welcome, and he managed it. And also, born on this date, to swing it to the other end of the spectrum, 1981, Philip Rivers, born on this date. So I think he has his own personality quirks, but they
but
fit in a little
good.
Bit better in an NFL locker room than Jeff George's did. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you snore, the SomnaMed Custom Fit Snore Guard is going to make a holiday gift for all your loved ones if you get it for yourself. Check it out, 620-9225, the phone number for Dr. McCall's office, or check out jamesjmccall.com online for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Seattle signed free agent cornerback Kerry Williams to a three-year contract this offseason after losing Byron Maxwell, who started during their Super Bowl year last year in free agency. Now just 12 games into that three-year deal, the Seahawks have released Williams. This is the second contract for Kerry that has been terminated before reaching its conclusion after being released by the Eagles last year in the offseason. DeMarco Murray has apparently decided that talking to the media or even Chip Kelly about his role in the offense is not going to be enough. Instead, Murray had a meeting yesterday with Philadelphia Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie to discuss his frustration with his role. Murray had just 8 carries for 24 yards in the Eagles' upset win over New England this weekend.
That'll go over well,
yeah,
won't it? Yeah.
Congratulations to Dallas Cowboys tight end Jason Witten. He became just the 12th player and second tight end in NFL history to record 1,000 career receptions. Every one of them has been in a Dallas uniform.
He's been a good player, man. Really good player.
Right. And I think the most impressive thing, you know, the other guy that did it was Shannon Sharp, right?
How many guys did you say did it?
I saw two.
Two others or two including Witten?
Two including him. I thought it would be Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to know what Shannon Sharp's numbers are.
Well, take a look there.
So, because I thought he was over as well. But either way, I mean, the impressive thing about Jason Witten is that the guy is tough. He's played with Knicks through the years, and he's been a very willing, good blocker, which, you know, some of the other guys that you talk about were never that. Shannon Sharp, I got to block, but I don't want to. Jason Witten would block.
Shannon Sharp, 815
okay.
receptions in his career. Antonio Gates, just trying to pick some of these guys out here on the all-time reception list that are tight ends at 827 right now. It always amazes me every time I see his name here in the top 25. Masin Muhammad. I know he's not a tight end. Masin Muhammad's
played the game like a tight end.
23rd most receptions in NFL history.
He was the strongest wide receiver that I ever saw play, ever. I mean, the guy would take hits from DBs back in an era when you could whack them. There was no protecting the wide receiver.
Right.
And he would just absorb it and keep on going, had strong hands, strong body. And the closest thing that I ever saw to that in Jacksonville was Willie Jackson. Willie had a little bit of that trait, not to the level of Muhammad, but he had that strength about him.
You have Witten, as you mentioned, Tony, with 1,003, and Tony Gonzalez, 1,325, trails only Jerry Rice, who had 1,549 in his career. So Rice has got a 200-plus gap on catches.
There's another 200-plus gap from 2 to 3.
Right, from Gonzalez to, 220 from Gonzalez to Marvin Harrison at 1,100. But, I mean, theoretically, if Witten, I don't know what his plans are, he's 33, he could certainly get up to a third on the all-time list, if not catch Gonzalez. He could get another 100. Another 100 puts him third on the all-time list of receptions for any player.
Yeah, first ballot Hall of Famer.
Think first ballot?
Yeah.
I don't think he'll get in on the first ballot. You know why? Didn't score enough touchdowns. Was he there for any of those? I don't think he got any rings either, right?
No.
At the end, no rings, and he has put up huge reception numbers, but oftentimes has just been an afterthought in the red zone, which is mysterious with a guy his size, but I think ultimately that'll keep him from being a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's just like, because Jeff, every year you look up, man, it's like, boy, the new crop is good, and there are so many, you know, holdovers from the year before, and you're only getting six guys in, not to mention the two with the Veterans Committee. It's just a tough sledding to get in, you know?
Yeah, and it's I hope that one day they start putting some of the non-skilled players in that deserve to go in, you know, because that's the one thing. I mean, it is the Hall of Fame, and I've had many conversations with Vic Ketchman about this over the years, and he tried to explain to me that, look, it's the Hall of Fame, which means you're famous for something. You know, most of the skill position players fall into that category a lot better than guards or defensive tackles.
Sure.
But, you know, I think that some of those guys that are not in, those positions are worthy because they were great players. I think it's all relative.
There is that fame aspect to it. Like, when you look at Joe Namath's career numbers, not spectacular. Joe Namath guaranteed Super Bowl III, which was the most significant, perhaps, single game in the history of professional football, although there's some debate on whether or not the merger was due to happen anyway. But regardless, without that, if he loses Super Bowl III, I don't think Joe Namath is in the Hall of Fame, although you can make a case because he was a famous frontline guy. He was the first 4,000-yard passer in a single season, but he had a couple, three really good years, and he had a lot of injuries and a lot. I mean, it was not a slam dunk case if you take the name Namath off the ballot.
Yeah,
put it that way.
He had a lot of notoriety. For
he did have that
the off the field stuff.
Yes, he did.
That was legendary.
Yes, he did.
And I will say this: he's one of the greatest guys I've ever met in my life.
It was great for me to meet him. Was phenomenal. A few years back at the Super Bowl, and he's wearing an all green jacket. Still think it's the only time I've ever seen him on Radio Row in about 10, 12 years of covering the Super Bowl. And Arlie Johnson was our producer at the time, and he bird-dogged him for a couple hours. I mean, you know, stand right on his hip, hey, can we be next? No, you know, and we finally get him over there. And he's got the ring from Super Bowl III, and he goes, I said, is that the ring? And he just took it right off. He said, here you go. And he put it right in the palm of my hand. Mm-hmm. And it's so tiny compared to the rings now.
Sure.
I mean, tiny, Jeff. It's like a quarter of the size of the rings that they get now to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I just remember, you know, when I went to New York, you know, it was a first-round pick, and he comes into the locker room and sits down, introduces himself, and had a conversation with him. And I was like, you know, that was really nice of him to do that. I really appreciated it. But, you know, every time he came back, he'd always come and sit with me and spend 15, 20 minutes, and we just talk about, you know, everything under the sun. And he was just one of those genuine guys that you really appreciate. He had no agenda, just wanted to get to know you. And of course, I wanted to get to know him. I mean, here we're talking about one of the greatest players in history, one of the most notorious.
Right, most recognized
in Jets
players
history.
In history.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder if that, in terms of football memorabilia, in terms of a championship ring or a Super Bowl ring, because maybe some championship ring from way back in bygone days is so much older, might be worth more, you know, from some legendary figure. But in the Super Bowl era, wouldn't on the open market, wouldn't that have to be the most expensive ring that would sell for the highest? I mean, it's Namath's guarantee, the one Super Bowl that the Jets won, and you know the significance and the myth that surrounds it to this day, I would think would bring a pretty penny.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and if Joe Namath had done that and played in Kansas City Wouldn't it have been right? Would it have moved the needle?
Not nearly as much, right? Now, so all those factors going into it. But I got a couple here on the text line. We'll get to coming up next 641-1010. If you'd like to get in that avenue, we'll also hear from Gus Bradley, his press conference yesterday, weighing in on how his team played against the Tennessee Titans this past Sunday. With Jeff Logman, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Logman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Tuesday is brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Tony Smith here with you on 1010 XL. We'll get to Gus Bradley momentarily, Jeff, but the good news is we've got John Aponavedra on the line, and he says he has the answer to all of the Jaguars' problems. So this is what we've been waiting for all season long. John, why didn't you call earlier? Good morning. How are you?
Thank you. Listen, I do have the solution, and I would hope that Jeff would discuss it with the management of the Jaguars. They do not hustle to the ball. You look around, and there's four or five guys standing there with their hands on their hips while there's a few people struggling with the ball on the ground. They should be, like last night, that game with the Cowboys and the Redskins. When the play is about over with, everybody's on the ground. Everybody's hustling at the ball. I'm not saying spear people. I'm not saying get penalties. But hustle to the ball. That gives you turnovers. That gives you all kinds of good things. Instead of standing around with your hand on your hips, I finally got a piece of paper and a pencil, and I started writing down, you know, how many people at Jaguars are just standing there. So please, pass that
along. Well, how many? How many did you come up with your
average of about four or five.
Per play?
Yes. In other words, instead of hustling for the ball, they're standing there jumping over other players. So they won't step on them. I mean, if they're not hustling, they teach you to hustle in Pop Warner. Hustle to the ball. Nobody's standing up. Look at these.
All right, John. John, we appreciate the feedback there. Jeff, what does your film study show you on that score?
Well, I don't have a score like that.
No.
To be honest with you, I haven't charted it. Maybe I need to start charting it.
Does that seem like, I mean,
is that that old loafing stat?
Yeah, I mean they definitely keep track of loafs, but I don't see what John is seeing to where there's people standing around. I mean, there's effort can always be better. I mean, I will say that effort can always be better, but I don't think effort is a question for this football team.
All right, John, thank you for the call. You and Jeff see it from a different vantage point. We appreciate the feedback nonetheless. Let's get to some of Gus Bradley.
Let me give you a couple examples. The errant snap with Stefan Wisniewski goes well over the head of Blake Bortles. If you could just see what Marquise Lee did on that play. He split out wide left in a bunch formation. Now this is an offensive player now. This isn't defense. Over the head, Marquise Lee is running some type of quick screen to the left or something, so his attention is kind of back. So he sees the errant snap, takes off, much like you remember the game last year against Dallas in London, runs down on the turnover,
right.
Makes the tackle.
Right.
He literally breaks, and he's probably all the way at the numbers, away from the far, you know, the hash that the ball is on, and he sprints, and he comes all the way across the field. And in most guys in that situation, would they have provided great effort on that? I mean, if the ball's errant, I'm 50 yards away or 40 yards away, whatever it is, 35 yards away. Full-blown sprint. He actually makes contact with, was it Williamson, the linebacker that made the fumble recovery for a touchdown?
Yeah, Woodyard.
Or Woodyard.
Yeah.
Makes contact with Woodyard and attempts to strip the ball before Woodyard crosses the goal line. I mean, I'm talking, that's not great effort? I mean, that's phenomenal.
What about the other 10?
The other guys were hustling as well, the ones
kidding.
That saw it. But, I mean, to me, you know, and look, we've all been kind of critical of Marquise Lee. You know, hasn't been able to practice much, hasn't had a big impact on the field, you know. And I don't want to say he's a tease, but, I mean, a lot of people kind of have that perception of him that, you know, we've been promised so much with Marquise Lee, but yet we're not seeing it. You know, and seeing plays like the one we saw in London last year and seeing him on that play – It makes me impressed and probably more patient with Marquise Lee, because when you see a play like that, you can tell that it matters to Marquise Lee. This team matters to him. And I just wanted to put that out there. And then even if you look at the Marcus Mariota run, Telvin Smith was in the backfield, one of the blitzers, and literally is caught up in the backfield trash. Marcus Mariota splits it right up the middle. Two guys kind of, you know, get a little bit out of bounds, which can happen on a blitz. Marcus takes off and runs. And Telvin Smith sprinted the 87 yards the entire way from the backfield and couldn't get there fast enough. But the effort that he displayed on that play, the effort that Aaron Colvin displayed on that play, but he ended up getting blocked by Kendall Wright. I mean, and to me, I don't know where John's coming from. I mean, plays like that to me are signature plays with effort, and I'm seeing it.
All right, there you go. I didn't have that impression either that he got. But look, there's certainly, I'm sure, instances when you see guys standing around, but you got to understand too, sometimes, just because the ball's, you know, the ball ends up on the ground, there are a few guys around it, doesn't mean every lineman or anybody should be diving in to be a part of that play. You know, there's, you know, you don't just go willy-nilly diving into every single pile. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just because a bunch of guys end up on the ground after one play doesn't mean it was smart football necessarily on all of their parts to end up in that position. But regardless, let's move on. Gus Bradley asked yesterday about defensive struggles and a lot of questions about, is it personnel, is it coaching? And he asked, or was asked, about how much of the defense struggling can be attributed to the coaching staff.
As a coaching staff, we're trying to figure it out. I mean, we ran 3-man, 4-man, 5-man, 6-man, different style of pressures, and we're trying to find out what works. And I think that we look at it and say, with that, is that taken away from us playing fast? And I think we had, 16 missed tackles yesterday. And I think that we're competing to try to figure out what works best for our guys. We've got some good players, and right now we're not playing fast. And I think that's what we need to take a look at more than anything.
Should they know 12 games into the season what works for them? Or is it, you know?
Well, I mean, they got an idea of what works and what doesn't work. They're just trying to find a way to create, you know, defense. Because, I mean, what they'd like to do is to rush 4. And, you know, and Gus was, you know, was kind of asked the question too about personnel. And he said, we got good players here. What else do you expect them to say? You know, I mean, you can't expect him to say, you know what? We just don't have a Leo that's worth a darn. We've got nobody that can rush the passer from the 3 technique on a regular down basis. He can't say that. Because if he says that, what does that do to his locker room? I mean, as a coach, you've got to coach the ones that you've got. You've got to go ahead and try to get the most out of them as possible. So saying anything that would be negative towards the personnel wouldn't serve any purpose but to maybe make himself feel better.
And make a few fans feel better, because there's certainly that segment out there, Tony, we've heard from all year. We want Gus to blow up at the podium and sure, rip guys and all this. And, you know, some coaches go that route, but others find it to be counterproductive.
And honestly, the good coaches don't do that. I mean, Bill Belichick doesn't rip his guys in the media. He may rip them in the locker room, but he doesn't rip them where everybody can see it, as much of a red-faced guy as he can be on the sideline. Gus Bradley was also asked the question that I've heard I don't know how many times, especially this year, but it's a direct reflection of a fan question here. Gus was asked how the defense got to be this bad in year 3.
You know, I think it's the ability to win on third down. You know, that's a big part, because even in the red zone, we didn't win on third down on one occasion. So, you know, that's the part that we're looking at. And a lot of it has to do with tying those two together, the rush and coverage, and, you know, the different styles of pressures. The takeaways that we got yesterday were both on pressures. So we're looking at, we're saying, I think there was 2 pressures off of, we had the takeaways, and then there was, you know, there's 13 pressures for 5 yards or less, and then there's 4 pressures for 152 yards. You know, it was like one or the other. You know, where it's hit and miss. And I think I mentioned that before when we were saying, hey, Gus, how do you try to find pressure? How do you find ways to pressure the quarterback? Well, when you pressure the quarterback and you blitz, you're going to come up with some big plays and you may give up some explosives. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening to us. And, you know, the one just happened to be, you know, at that point in time, I think we were up, what, 9 minutes left to go in the game, 32-28, and he runs an 87-yard touchdown run off of a pressure. You know, that's can be damaging.
So it sounds like Gus is saying we're kind of forced into bringing more pressure than we want to, and thus, from time to time, you're going to have it blow up in your face because that's the nature of a high-risk maneuver. Sometimes if the other team can pick it up, you're going to leave yourself exposed in the secondary, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that's what happened. You know, you bring one extra guy and rush, you're a delinquent coverage. You know, you drop one extra guy in coverage, you're delinquent in pass rush with a three-man rush. I mean, it's a numbers game. They're trying to find a way to create opportunities at big plays, and it's worked to some extent, but also you're going to get exposed on some instances as well, and they got exposed against Tennessee on a couple of them.
It's frustrating to me. What was frustrating was seeing, like, on a key third down, you'd see Tennessee walk seven up to the line of scrimmage, and they just send the house against Blake, and the Jags didn't seem to be able to deal with it, you know, whether it was the protection, whatever, whether Blake didn't see a guy coming open
game
quick enough. Yeah, that kind of, you know, scenario where it's like we're just going to load up and come after you. And
now, what was the down and distance? I was like fourth and long,
yeah,
or maybe it was only fourth and five. I don't remember.
Right.
It was fourth and five. The last one, it was fourth and five.
They brought seven on that. And
right.
So you had an unblocked guy. You had routes that were actually pretty good for that situation, but the one guy that he had open was the unblocked guy that you couldn't block, you know, because you didn't have anybody for him. You know, when they bring seven, you've got essentially on that alignment, you've got five offensive linemen and then a tight end and a quarterback. So that's your seven. Well, one of them's the passer.
Right.
So you only got
right. So one
six.
Guy's unblocked.
Yeah, one guy's unblocked, six on seven, and one of the guys that was unblocked was coming right in the direction of where A-Rob was cutting across that what would have been a possible first down game.
Hmm. All right, moving on, a couple more thoughts from Gus Bradley from yesterday. Moving on to Gus on what's been successful. What have they done defensively that has worked?
I would say that, you know, some of our things, when you look at them, some of our man pressures and some of the things that we've done on third down, we've seen a higher percentage of success than other things we're doing. Our three-man rush, where we brought pressure off the three-man rush, that has been, you know, the numbers look good. But our four-man rush, you know, that has not been where we need it to be, those numbers.
Well, yeah, the three-man rush when you get pressure is always going to look good, isn't it? I mean, if you can get pressure with three.
No, what he was talking about is when, and I think he kind of misspoke there, is that when they go three down and bring pressure.
Oh, okay, I got you. Three down linemen, and they send guys
right
along with it. Okay.
Right, that's been really good for them, which
that was a little confusing
to
me. I got you.
One last cut here, talking about the defense as well. He's asked about the lack of performance from that Leo position.
When we're looking at the Leo spot, what we're getting out of the Leo the last couple of weeks, we need to try to find a way to get more. And however we do it, whether it's through pressure, through rotations, through, you know, looking at Chris Smith, through, you know, we just got to look at it to challenging me more. And, we've got to find a way through us as a coaching staff, put them in a better position, you know, straining, you know. But you're right. I think overall the Leo spot, what we're hoping to get out of that position, we're not getting exactly what we want.
Yeah, and his commentary there about put them in a better position. The position puts them in the best position all the time. You know, so that's the coach, you know, taking a little bit of the heat there. But the design of the defense, the Leo is always in the optimum position to be able to provide pass rush. That's how it's built. And so the production is not there. You know, so there's only a couple things you can do. Try somebody else or get more out of what you got.
Right.
Pretty limited.
They haven't gotten any more out of what they've got.
No.
So I know where you're at on that. One more here from Gus. Defensively, it's been suggested maybe, you know, as a defensive-minded head coach, maybe he takes over the play calling. Maybe he takes a more hands-on approach, something like that. Gus was asked if there would be a benefit to a different coach doing the play calling on defense?
You know, when we go in there and meet, and the meet as a defensive coaching staff, is to try to find ways to put our guys in better position to make plays. And whether it's through pressures, whether it's through different alignments, things like that, we're all going through the same battle. So it's not necessarily the call. It's, that is, you know, I mean, it's the same thing. You know, we go up there, it's on the board, we kind of decide how we're going to do it and how we're going to go about it, and then you just got to play. I think it's, you know, more that I don't think fundamentally we're as good as we have been in other games. You know, the tackling issue, listen, I think we're, if not, one of the lowest teams in missed tackles. But I've seen it cleaned up the last couple weeks, but it showed up again yesterday. And I don't know if we're at the team that we have defensively with adding more things. We've added more pressures. We've added more coverage concepts. I don't know if that's slowing us down. And because of that, if it's not allowing us to play fast, and by us not playing fast, you're seeing more missed tackles and missed assignments, and it's coming back to haunt us. I think that's more the issue.
Has that shown up, Jeff? Does it look like maybe there is too much going on defensively right now?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to say because I don't know the exact design of the defense. I can just tell you when it's working and when it's not.
Sure.
And when it's not working, as it hasn't at times with certain pressures, then yeah, you're doing too much. But you know, you're kind of in a catch, okay? You know, if you're trying to generate something, you have to do things different to be able to do it, right? I mean, so you know, look, sometimes you got to take chances. Sometimes you got to bring pressure. And do you stop bringing pressure just because, okay, well, we feel like maybe we're doing a little too much and we're, no, I think you just, to me, you say, we're running it, learn how to do it. If you can't learn how to do it, we'll find somebody that can learn how to do it.
One last cut here from Gus Bradley talking about the kicker, Jason Myers, about a month ago when they had the kickers in for the tryout. I thought it was funny when he was asked about it. He's, did you seriously consider any of those guys? No, not once we watched them. Basically is what he had to say. He was asked yesterday if he still trusts his kicker, Jason Myers.
I trust him in field goals. I think he's done a good job there. You know, I don't know what his stat is. He's, what, 22 of 26 22 of 26 in field goal attempts. And, you know, 85% somewhere in there. It's pretty good. I think, you know, compared to other people that have been here in their career, you know, if he continues that would be a good number. But it's the extra point. His percentage is 79% on that. It drops. So, you know, that's the part that we need to get right.
Yeah. Well, we all know that. How do you get that right? I mean, those are supposedly easier kicks than the field goals that he's converting. So
well, some of Jason's field goals have been shorter.
Some of them have. Yeah, certainly some of them have. But I mean, some of the longer ones. I mean, overall, though.
The first one was on Jason all the way. The second one I put on the snap hold combination. Low snap by Carson Tinker. Brian Anger ends up getting the ball down in time, but had the laces facing Jason. And look, when you've got a guy who's already thinking about it, that's the last thing you want to have or for him to see as he's looking down to kick it is laces. You know, so it's got to be better. There's no question about it. Are there better options out there? I don't know. I don't know what's out there. I mean, those guys are the ones that know what's out there, and they've worked out guys before to kind of get a gauge, you know. But there's one thing that is for sure. You can't have the change of the game calling happen because you're missing extra points. And that's what happened this past week. If you make those extra points, all of a sudden that's a different ball game.
Yeah.
Totally different ball game. And missing extra points affects coaching, and it affects the energy of your football team. It affects momentum that you have in a ball game. It's got to get fixed one way or another.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you today, which Jaguar player in 2015 has most exceeded your expectations? We'll get to some of your responses coming up. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com with Jeff Loggeman and Tony Smith. I'm Mike Dempsey. It is Jaguars Today rolling on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, coming down the stretch here, if we have time, we'll get to a couple more of your phone calls. There is apparently Cap Cappy's publicist keeps texting us, sign Cap Cappy, bring it back. Nordley Cappy, otherwise known as Cap, around these parts. One of them said, Jeff, send Gus an email. I know you guys are bros. Send the email. So there you have it.
Send him an email.
Send him an email. Try something. Try anything. Try something different. Today we asked you a little bit more on the positive bend here. Who is the Jaguar player has most exceeded your expectations coming into the season? Maybe you had high expectations for a guy like Allen Robinson or Allen Hurns, and they're doing what you expected. But who has most exceeded? We've got a nice little variety of responses, Tony, didn't we?
We did. From Chris, Hurns, to be honest, expected A-Rob to be great, but Hurns was a jewel as an undrafted free agent, better this year. From Duval Doom, I think it's A-Rob. I genuinely didn't know he was going to be this good. From Daniel, the easy response will be Bortles, but I'm going unconventional, saying Devon House. From Brian, Allen Hurns, I thought the undrafted free agent was a one-year wonder who had major drop issues. Glad to see I was wrong. From Matt, Jackson DeVille, so far so good. Zero hospital visits, got to work on his golf game, though. From Lars, the wide receiver core in Bortles has been great, but I'll go with Aaron Colvin. Hashtag the future is here. From Adrian, the Jaguar that has impressed me most is AJ Cann stepping in and playing good football. And from Irish Jaguar, AJ Cann finding two starting guards in the third round in consecutive years is good.
How many people
it's
would
better
you say,
than good.
How many people would you say voted for Allen Robinson in that? About half?
Not half.
I'm voting for him.
Are you
voting?
You're such a liar. You were so voting for Blake Bortles earlier today. Now, Allen Robinson joins us here in the studio at Everbank. And, Allen, we were just talking about which player has most exceeded your expectations. See, some people voted for you because you're having such a great year. Other people said, well, I expected him to be this good, so you didn't exceed the expectations. Have you surprised yourself with how productive you've been able to be in this pass offense this year?
No. You know, I mean, for me, you know, if our receiving core – you know, we really took into this offseason as far as, you know, we wanted to be the best receiving core, you know, that we could be, you know. So I don't think that we limited ourselves at any time. You know, we knew that we had a lot of talent in our room. You know, we had to just put it all together, you know. So I think everybody really, you know, me, Hurns, Marquise, you know, once Rashad came in, you know, Brian Walters really busted their butt throughout the spring and summer, you know, to get to where we're at now.
What's the meeting room dynamic like? I mean, because it's so young.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we always joke with Brian to give him a hard time, you know, because he has the most years, you know, in the NFL in our room, you know. So, I mean, we have a young room, but, you know, I mean, I think the head of our room, you know, has a ton of experience in Coach Sullivan, you know. So I think that kind of trickles down to us as well.
How much have you learned from him?
A ton, you know, just as far as, you know, breaking down film-wise, you know, really route techniques and things like that. You know, I mean, he's really helped me a ton.
For you, three touchdowns this week, obviously playing without Allen Hurns on the other side because of the scary injury the week before. What was your mentality getting ready for this week, knowing that you weren't going to have Hurns there on the other side?
You know, I really didn't press too much. You know, I think as an offense, you know, we were really pretty comfortable with Marquise coming in, you know. Really, I was excited for him, you know, as well, you know, to really have that full-time opportunity to be on the field with us and things like that, you know. So, I mean, I just took it the same way I would approach any other week, you know. I just had to be prepared for if any extra ops, you know, came my way to take advantage of that.
For the record, Brian Walters is 28 years old, all right? The old man.
He's the old man.
I know, but he's getting crushed at 28 years old.
Well, you're 22, right, Al?
22.
Okay, and Hurns, he's 23.
I believe so. 23 or 24. I'm not sure.
I think he just turned 24.
Yeah. I understand he is the old man in that room.
He is.
He's 28, man. Brian Walters got a lot of life left ahead of him.
You know, and then it's funny because I'm still the youngest in the room. So, I mean, they still give me a hard time.
Well, maybe next year you won't be.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, maybe you'll be one of the youngest Pro Bowlers this year. Have you let your mind wander to that at all? The voting is still open, by the way. Folks can go to NFL.com. And you're deserving, man. I mean, a lot of times when you play in a small market and you haven't been there before, sometimes it takes a while to get recognized, and what'll happen is maybe the first time you get in kind of as an alternate, but man, you are, if there are eight receivers better than you in the National Football League this year, I need to see them, because what a tremendous year. Have you allowed yourself to think about that even for a moment here or there?
You know, maybe just a tiny bit, you know, but for me, you know, I mean, my focus is, you know, on this last quarter of the season, you know what I mean? I know we have a big quarter ahead of us, you know, we still have a chance, you know, as far as with the division how it is, you know. So, I mean, for us, you know, just taking it one game at a time, you know, for me, myself, you know, so just focusing on the Colts this week, you know, going into practice, you know, locked in and try to help my team get a win on Sunday.
Good answer.
Did you hear any of the noise? Look, Jaguars fans have been waiting for somebody to replace Jimmy and Keenan for a long time. They haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2005 until you got there this weekend. Did you know all of that going into that game?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's inevitable not to hear, you know, from how big social media is, you know, now. But, I mean, I kind of knew that, you know, I really didn't think too much of it. You know, I knew that we had a big task ahead of us, you know, as far as a good Titans defense, you know. So, I mean, just going throughout the course of the week, you know, just preparing the same way that I had been, you know, just really trying to get myself ready and prepared for Sunday.
Now, here's the numbers. 16th in the National Football League in receptions, 5th in yards, and no wide receiver has any more touchdowns.
Right.
Pretty simple.
And look at, and in terms of yards per catch, anybody who has a higher yards per catch, Sammy Watkins is the next closest guy, and Allen's got just about double his receptions. And we know the more you get, the harder it is to maintain that high yards per catch. So you've been outstanding in that capacity as well. Here's what I want to know. Are you going to go 6 for 6 in the red zone every week now? how did you improve it so much from the San Diego game to the Tennessee game?
You know, as an offense, you know, as far as, you know, with us, some of the down things that we've had this season, you know, I don't ever think that we've been too far off. You know, just here and there, you know, maybe, you know, on third down sometime, you know, in the red zone sometime. I don't ever really think that we were too far off, you know. So, I mean, we just honed in on the plan this week and our game plan as far as going into the red zone and really just took advantage of our opportunities.
And a little different approach in the red zone this week. Are you still anxious to make the fade work, the fade and the back shoulder throw?
You know, for us, you know, I mean, if it's there, you know, we'll take it, you know. But I mean, Coach Ole has done a real good job, you know, of kind of moving us around and to different positions and things like that to give us different opportunities, you know. So, I mean, whatever is available for us and whatever the plan has, you know, that's what we'll go with.
How fun is it playing with Blake Bortles?
You know, it's fun. You know, it's fun as far as, you know, like in the red zone, you know, two plays he made, you know, could have been possible sacks, you know, but he's able to extend the play and, you know, to trust us, you know, to make a play, you know. So I think in the red zone this week, you know, he made some tight throws, you know. So, I mean, it's really fun.
What is he better at this year? Obviously, he's always had the ability to extend the play, but he's clearly, you go from 11 touchdowns, 17 interceptions as a rookie to 27-13 where he stands right now. It's been quite the turnaround.
You know, for him, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard for me to say, you know, because I'm a receiver, you know. I mean, I don't really, you know, judge quarterbacks too much. But as far as, you know, his confidence and how he comes into the huddle, you know, each and every possession, you know, as far as, you know, like last week, we knew it was a shootout, you know. So, I mean, he came into the huddle, you know, you could just see the confidence in him, you know, that we're going to move the ball down and we're going to score, you know, even after turning the ball over, you know, and them getting a touchdown, you know, we came back the next position and scored a touchdown, you know. So I just think you always see the confidence and resiliency in Blake.
We've been talking a little bit on the show about competition. Competition amongst position groups, does it exist in the wide receiver room?
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I think as far as us, you know, we know the player that each one of us can be, you know. So I think even when you see like Hearns making plays and Julius make plays, you know, I think we always, you know, challenge each other, you know, to make the next big play. You know, I mean, who's it going to be going into this drive to make the big play?
Have you had the conversation with Blake that one-on-one, just give me a chance? Have you had that, or is that just something that he did naturally since you got here?
I think that's just something that Blake, you know, has done, really has done naturally. You know, I think as far as technique-wise with some routes, you know, we maybe have, you know, had to practice it up a little bit as far as that, you know. But as far as him trusting me, you know, I think he's really trusting me to go out there and to make the 50-50 ball. You know, I think that really kind of helped us out throughout OTAs. You know, he did a lot of throwing them up, you know, sometime, and I was able to make some catches, you know. So I think that's where the trust started, you know. And then kind of then we just carried it on.
Now wait a minute, that trust went way beyond regular trust, because the play that I showed last night, right? It was a double move on the corner. You got a safety over the top. He's got no business throwing that.
Yeah, yeah, you know,
he still throws it.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, I just, you know,
you didn't expect it coming either at first.
No, at first I didn't, you know. But I mean, once I seen him heave it out there, you know, And he gave me a chance. You know, I just try to go up and make a play.
75-25 is the new
right. Ball. I heard you say that on the, instead of the 50-50 balls, it's 75-25 balls here. Allen Robinson for a couple more minutes before we let you go, man. For you, just I would imagine your own confidence grows with every new success you have. You don't strike me as a diva-type guy, but you wide receivers have to have that belief that you can beat anybody, that the guy lining up across from you is not as good as you. Have you seen that grow within yourself as the season's gone along?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and even, you know, once I played, you know, in my final game last year in Dallas, you know, as you kind of watch film, you know, you start to learn, you know, Coach Sullivan techniques and things like that and get better at it. You know, that's where the trust and stuff, and that's where, you know, the confidence starts to come, you know. So I think for us, you know, going up against our secondary each and every day in practice, you know, with those guys challenging us, you know, I think that's where the confidence comes in throughout the course of the week, you know, the confidence in your techniques, the confidence in the game plans and things like that, you know. So, I mean, we really preach that, you know, if you go out there throughout the course of the week, you know, put it all on the line, you know, that Sunday, you know, it's not too big of a deal, you know, it's just another day, another opportunity for us.
Well, I hope you get an opportunity at making the Pro Bowl, and fans can go to NFL.com/Pro Bowl/ballot to vote for Allen today, but congratulations on an award you've already received, the Ed Block Courage Award, which you received because, you know, I know what goes into that. Last year, you had a foot injury, stress fracture in your foot. You've been able to come back and do great. How is the foot?
You know, it's good. You know, I mean, last year, you know, it was tough, you know, as far as, you know, I had never had a major injury like that before. You know, I mean, the only injury that I had was in high school. I had torn my labrum, but I wasn't out for all that long as far as, you know, once my labrum kind of healed up, you know, you're kind of back to your normal movement and things like that, you know. But, I mean, with the foot, you know, I was in the boot for about 16 to 18 weeks, you know, so that was tough, you know. So, I mean, it was a little bit slower process than I thought, you know. But, I mean, I trusted the trainers in there and what they had me doing, you know, and it's really paid off for me.
All right. Once again, NFL.com/Pro Bowl/ballot. Get my man to Honolulu, please, right? I mean, he deserves it. So just do the work, Jaguar fans, and I know you're out there voting as frequently as you can.
Was the bucket celebration, was that you or Hearns? Who came up with the bucket celebration?
That was me, you know. Two of my friends, you know, that had went to Penn State, you know, it was kind of their idea, you know. So I talked to Hearns about it, you know, and then we started doing it.
There you go. Allen Robinson having some fun. Good luck this week against Indianapolis.
It.
And, you know, I'm sure for you guys, frustrated with the record like a lot of fans are, but the potential is certainly there. We're seeing that offense really starting to blossom, man. So continued success. Thanks for stopping in today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
There he goes, Allen Robinson. Take care of him. Please wrap him in the bubble wrap as you move him down the hallway now. We want to keep this guy healthy for the final four games of the season. All right, that's going to do it for us. We appreciate Allen Robinson popping in as we wrap things up on this Tuesday. Thanks to all of you out there in listener land. Glad we could bring you a few of the thoughts of your head coach, Gus Bradley, today. So for Jeff Loggeman, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato as well. And thanks to Allen Robinson of your Jacksonville Jaguars for stopping by. Tuesday is brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Loggy, see you next week. I'll see you before then, but we'll talk to you next week on Jaguars Today.
Sounded like a plan.
There he goes. Go out in the woods and go kill something. And Tony and I will be back tomorrow here on Jaguars Today. Coming up next, you've got XL Primetime. Stick around right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo! That's great job!